Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Rachel.
What's on your mind today?
Well, there's a lot of things on my mind as we enter into another lockdown phase and the holidays are upon us. The end of the quarter, thinking about the new year. And one of the things that's been on my mind for a while is how are we all going to handle the holidays just in general? But then for those who are divorced, living in binuclear families, and binuclear families are two bio parents who have divorced and are raising their children together, but not in the same home because they're not together. And one of the things that I've heard quite frequently over the last 9 months is what a challenge it's been for families who are divorced, who are sharing custody of their children, navigating the pandemic and the rules with the lockdowns and how to go from house to house, or, you know, do we get tested, or who's allowed in the pod? And so it's caused some confusion and some challenges for families who are trying to figure out how they can best, you know, still see their children, still share custody, but not, pass back viruses. And so that's been something that's been kind of brewing, and we haven't talked about it yet. And then with the holidays coming up and the re-lockdowns, it seemed like it'd be an important thing to talk about again. And along with that same topic, we've heard a lot about, you know, how stressful it is for many people being locked down or the stay-at-home orders in their relationships and their marriages. We've seen increases in calls to domestic violence hotlines, to intimate partner violence hotlines. There's greater concern about child abuse and child neglect because the stress and pressures that everyone's experiencing has heightened these issues that in some ways have been, you know, somehow minimized when families are able to go to school and go to work and get out into the world. But all being locked in together, it's manifested in a lot more cases and calls of distress. The other thing that has come up quite often is the amount of divorces that are occurring as a result of the pandemic, that for many people who are just kind of bouncing along for years or months, being, you know, shut in together has caused a lot of issues to come to the surface. And what I found really interesting about the research around the rise in divorce is that there are actually very conflicting research out there. On September 1st, the New York Post wrote an article about the higher incidence of divorce, that there'd been more filings of divorce in this year. And that was actually backed up by the National Law Review that has stated that there has been a 34% increase in filings for divorce since the start of the pandemic. So that was on September 1st. But on October 21st, another article came out in the Washington Post that said, no, in actuality, there's been a decrease in divorces since the start of the pandemic. And this was based on research that was done by a sociologist who was looking at five different states and different rates of divorce filings, and actually found that for many people who were on the bubble, who were in trouble or struggling, what they found is that for many people, they've actually rebuilt their marriages because the pandemic and what's happening with the climate and the political unrest has caused people to really rethink their values and their priorities and what they want to put their time and energy into. And so when you look at the big picture of relationships and couples, more people have kind of reevaluated and come back together than are actually getting divorced. And I found that fascinating because for a lot of people prior to the stay-at-home orders, people were moving 1,000 miles per hour, you know, going to work, working 60 hours a week, kids getting dropped off at daycare for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours a day. And so the intensity of people's lives in many ways was unsustainable. In the best of conditions, it was unsustainable. And so for a lot of people, slowing down, being able to work from home, those who have been able to navigate the change, you know, found a way to get the kids online or get their education or form pods, have found ways to still have some support system, have found ways to still financially be able to keep their life afloat. For those families that were on the hairy edge before, there's actually been a decrease in divorces. But having said that, for the couples that are moving towards divorce, interestingly, it's more young couples, couples that have been together for 5 years or less, who are moving towards divorce more quickly than couples that have been together for a longer period of time. And with the pandemic, you know, every stressor that people experience before has been magnified. And I don't know if you've ever thought about what the common stressors are for a marriage. But according to research done with clinicians who work with divorcing couples, the most common sources of relationship trouble are, number one, financial stress. And that's across the board, whatever kind of financial stress that might be. And that also is true for roommates or people cohabitating. That's the most common stress, or people who aren't even married. The most common stress that we experience as humans, even in the best of times, is financial stress. But after that is boredom. And people don't talk about that very often, that one of the major causes of divorce is that couples get complacent and they get bored in their relationship and they start looking around for something novel or interesting, and it destabilizes them. But that's a whole nother show. Another problem is disagreements about parenting. And so you can imagine for couples that are locked in at home, those disagreements on how we're going to parent and how much screen time can really cause that issue to magnify. And then distribution of work at home, who's doing the majority of housework and tending to the children. So those are the common sources of relationship trouble. And for couples that don't have a long track record, you can see how they would become quickly destabilized with the lockdown, because they would probably not have the resolve or the resilience or the years of working out problems to be able to get through this. Because you need to have some history of being able to overcome issues in order to really help your marriage survive. The other thing that comes up is that couples may be experiencing old stressors, but they also might be finding new stressors that have come to the surface that they didn't recognize before. Because what a lot of couples do is that they use their support systems to try to stabilize their relationships. That for many couples, having, you know, outside friends or outside activities or hobbies, or being able just to go to work outside of the house, having that support system outside of your marital relationship can help to stabilize it, because you're not putting all that intensity and pressure and expectations on that one other person. So with the pandemic, people who have kind of lost that ability to get out of the house or meet with other friends or, you know, burn off steam in other areas are finding more distress. And so having said that, it's a great time to reassess right now. Where are we? Are we feeling the stress? Are we a new young couple that hasn't been through a lot of stress or problems in our lives? This is a great time to think about who we are and what we value and why did we get together? And have we been using our support system or our friends outside of our relationship or our work or our hobbies to not have to put time and effort into our relationships? You know, these are great questions to ask ourselves, especially as we go back into stay at home and we come into the holidays, to really think about what am I doing in my relationship that's avoiding the actual relationship itself? And for couples that are divorced and have been moving through kind of this whole pandemic of figuring out custody and how we're going to visit and how we're going to make sure no one gets sick, as we move into the holidays, the question on tap is, what is your plan? How can couples successfully work with a binuclear situation, two biological parents in two separate homes, to make sure that everyone still gets their emotional needs met, and to make sure that the children feel stabilized and supported? And so the focus for today is going to be on what it looks like for binuclear families, divorced families, as they go into the holidays and just deal with the pandemic in two separate homes in general. And the idea around nesting. And nesting is when the children stay in the family home and the parents leave and take turns coming into the house. And so I want to talk about nesting and nesting over the holidays and some strategies that you can use to successfully take on nesting if you're a divorced family, or to address the possibility of how to share your parenting roles. And because it's not my area of expertise, I've invited my friend Jennifer Blomfield to come on today and to talk about what nesting looks like and what nesting over the holidays looks like and how her work with couples has helped to bring about more stability for children and families post-divorce. Jennifer is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's also a divorce coach and does divorce mediation. So although we won't be opening up the phone lines, you can still ask a question or share a comment by giving us a call at 805-549-8855. Rachel will be happy to read your question over the air and Jennifer and I can address it. You can also send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can leave a message there or follow our story or see a beautiful picture of Jennifer on the beach so you can see who's talking to you today. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org and you can podcast our show anywhere you do podcasting or ask your kids, how do I do podcasting? And find a conversation with the reluctant therapist, hit subscribe and we will be there. So I look forward to see where our conversation takes us today. We're going to take a quick break and be back to talk to my guest, Jennifer Blomfield. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And welcome, Jennifer Blomfield, to the show.
Hi, Elizabeth, and viewers and listeners. It's so wonderful to be here again. Thank you for inviting me.
I like seeing you. This is the only way I can get together with my friends is I call them up and say, hey, will you come Zoom with me on Tuesday so we can have a conversation? It's become kind of a good lure to get my friends to come hang out with me for an hour.
Yeah, well, I was saying to you before that there seems to be some downtime during COVID, but yet we're all more busier than we've ever been because we're having to be more creative and strategic on how we live our lives, how we are with families, how we do our work. And so I'm just thrilled that we get to have this time as is and hopefully soon in person.
Yes, absolutely. And so Jennifer and I have known each other for a long time, 15 years plus. So we've watched our kids grow up together and we've watched our lives go through a lot of changes. And in the time that I've known you, you've gone through a divorce and kind of found your way through all that entailed, ups and downs. And then you went through and got your master's and got licensed as a marriage and family therapist, and then have found this specialty area in the work of divorce coaching. So can you start off talking a little bit about what that looks like and why you decided to do that specialty, that kind of work, having been through the divorce?
Well, I think for me, it just worked well being a licensed therapist, that the one thing that I have found with couples and in my personal life, that when you are going through a divorce, it is one of the highest stress things you could ever go through. And so when you're under high stress and cortisol is running through your body, you are not functioning at your highest capacity. And so what divorce coaches do is they look for those signs. Divorce coaches in collaborative divorce are licensed therapists. And so they'll look to see if their client is not self-regulating. And it's my job to make sure that that person is back, present, so they can make decisions that are going to change, you know, their life. So when I went through my divorce, I spent a lot of time frozen and paralyzed and didn't understand legal jargon. And so I just thought, oh, I'll just let professionals do their job. But then when I was asked to go through this training, both in mediation and in collaborative, I found it fascinating because I thought, oh, if I had known that then. Mm-hmm. And so I love this work because I'm able to really teach my clients what to look for. I give them homework. So they're really, really prepared before they go on this journey. And they're not surprised or they're not dumb. So that's how I fell into this work. And yes, I've been seeing clients through the pandemic and now through the holidays. So I'm seeing, and also the experience of my friends and that have gone through this. I feel like I have something to share.
So if just briefly to go back to your own experience with divorce, because I think people expect in any life transition through a loss or a grief, you know, through death or through divorce, that we should be over it and moving on much more quickly than we actually are capable of. And so can you address that, you know, the period of time it took you to actually go through the divorce to getting to where you are today, which you and I would both agree is thriving, but it hasn't been 6 weeks or 6 months or even a year. You know, how long has this process taken you to really move through to your new wholeness?
Well, statistics say it usually takes 1 year for every 5 years you've been married. Other statistics say pretty much you can't get through it without 2 years of soul searching. And it really depends on the person. It depends on if you are the one leaving the marriage, or it depends on if you have guilt about leaving the marriage, or it depends on if you have been planning an exit strategy for a long time and you've gone to couples counseling and you have prepared. So it's really very specific to who the person is. If you have any underlying traumas or stressors in your life prior, that's going to make it more difficult. And so that's when that person needs a little more help, more of a helping hand to self-regulate. So it really all depends. For me, I was kind of lucky because I had been licensed as a therapist. So I would say to myself, what would you tell a client? And then you do it and it wouldn't work. And then you do it again. And then you just really, it's about acceptance. This life change is here. And so how can I move on the best way that serves me? You have to become a little selfish. And as soon as you take care of yourself, everything else starts to fall into place. Your children are happy, your friends are noticing a difference, you have more to give to the world, and then you also realize you're not alone. This is something that's been going on forever. People separate. Even children going off to college, that is a separation. Divorce is similar to that. And if you do the work well and with help, with professionals, you and your ex can have a good relationship. It's different, but it can be good. And there is life after divorce and you can be friends.
And you brought up an interesting point that I don't know if I've ever connected, that the nuclear family itself is not a long-term family system, because once the children grow up and leave home, then you're no longer a nuclear family. You're now different nuclear families, your children split off and they start their own families. And so that's an interesting reframe. If we were to look at the, you know, end of a marriage and kind of moving to a binuclear family, it's in some ways just another iteration of the family changing and growing, and not necessarily a destruction of a marriage, but more of a restructuring maybe of a family.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just when someone goes off to college, it's when your children get married and suddenly you're not the primary, and everything shifts and changes. And it's a wonderful thing to see how people can change, and you're no longer responsible for their well-being, you just get to witness the fruits of your, you know, labor of love. And so as your children launch and have their own children, you and your ex can also enjoy the fruits of your labor. So there's the good in a marriage will always stay. The bad is no longer something you have to deal with. So in most cases, that's how I look at a good divorce. But you can't do it in 3 months, 4 months, 6 months. It takes time because you have to reinvent yourself, and you have to allow that other person who is your primary to reinvent themselves and be okay with it.
And almost you have to come to each other as two new people.
Absolutely.
Their children.
And children and parents do the same thing when they launch.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest is my friend Jennifer Blomfield, a licensed marriage and family therapist and divorce coach and collaborative mediator. And we're talking about some positive ways that families of divorce and couples can move forward and create a nest that is really stabilizing for all of them, for their children and for themselves. And I think it's important to talk about, Jennifer, because one of the big unintentional results of the feminist movement in the 1970s was that spike in divorce. And, you know, well over 50%+ of marriages were ending rapidly in the late 70s. And one of the things that no one anticipated was the impact of divorce on children. And so then subsequently we saw, and it's kind of yours and my generation, grew up as latchkey children. There was no childcare. There were no plans for kids after school. Moms were having to go back to work full time. There were no dads around to help with childcare. And so a whole generation of children kind of grew up coming home to empty houses after school. And they then themselves became parents who were really damaged by how poorly divorces were done in the 70s, and then raised a generation of children who feared divorce and, you know, went through their own anxiety or fear of getting divorced, which led to more divorces. I mean, we've kind of gone through this rapid fire four generations post big divorces in the 70s, trying to stabilize what marriages and divorce can look like. And it seems with this idea of nesting, here in the 20s, you know, the 2000s, that we might have finally come up with a solution that can lead to a healthy divorce that will nurture children so they aren't taking the trauma of divorce into their life and their marriages. So,
well, in nesting, what's beautiful about nesting is that it's taken away that stigma. You know, I was born in the 50s. So, yeah, divorce was like, oh, no, you stay there and you make it work. You make it work. Even though I also grew up in the 70s where feminism was like that was my young adult time. But now there's no stigma. Now it's like if something's not working and you can't fix it or repair it, then you move on, but you move on with dignity and respect and love. And that's what nesting does beautifully.
So give people,
pardon me?
So let's describe it for those who don't know what nesting
is. So nesting is when you have a primary home that the children live in and the parents separate and they go, it's like a timeout. They go in their own room, but in this case, it's often their own apartment. And then the one parent is with the children in the primary home and then they switch. And a lot of people do this, especially with young children, because there's too many changes for them. And it has been very effective. And then what's good about it is if you start to get triggered and confused because your heart opens and you know the marriage needs to end, you get to go to your room. Just like when you tell a child it's a timeout. Parents have to do timeouts, and then they have to follow their own rules of timeout. No arguing, just go to your own space. And that way everybody can go and self-regulate and prepare themselves for the reality of not being together. The kids, if the parents show respect and kindness to each other, the children are resilient. It's only when parents fight and do things in front of the children where we see damage. Mm-hmm. That can be repaired, but it's not it really sets kids up for having an idea that, like you said, no, nothing works. Marriage doesn't work. And you don't want to set that up. You want to set up love is always there. The marriage didn't work. But so you mean when the parents have this nesting protocol?
Yes. Well, but I think what's important is that when we first looked at the spike in divorce in the 70s, no one thought that it would impact children. Everyone just thought about the parents and how it impacted them. And then through the 80s and 90s, we, you know, started somehow thinking about how it impacted children, but weren't quite sure what to do about that. So we talked about blended families or, you know, different ways of talking about it. But now in the 2000s, what I hear you're saying is we're talking about family as a unit that stays together no matter what the marital status of the parents is. And so that as a professional, as a clinician, what I would think part of your divorce work is to help couples to overcome the anguish that they feel in the end of their marriage, but still come out as a family. Am I following that? Is that correct?
No, that is correct. And the nesting part is not forever. It is just sort of a bridge until people are comfortable being apart. Once the parents are apart long enough, then eventually the kids will go back and forth to the separate homes. And then the primary home is no longer, unless one spouse keeps the primary home. It's really that expression, the new normal. Kids will get used to anything if the structure is in place. And if parents are respectful to each other and that the stress level goes down, kids just want to play and they can play with mom, they can play with dad. And often when nesting goes well, they can play with mom and dad in a different way. I think you mentioned you saw a picture of me with my ex and my daughters the other day. And yeah, we have a wonderful relationship. We don't see each other that often. I don't, but my daughters do. And we all laugh and tell stories and we're the same people we were, but it's a different, we're different.
Well, and how long did that take though? Because again, I don't want people to feel like it was overnight.
No. And you have to remember too, it's not just how it is for the spouses. It's also for their others. So if the spouses have another person in their life, there's four people, and then you've got the kids. So the pile continues to get bigger. And so you have to be respectful of everyone's comfort zone. And so if someone doesn't want to hang out or they're not ready, then you want to meet everyone's needs in that way without taking your divorce. I mean, you have lost some, you know, rights to ownership's the wrong word, but there is, they are no longer your primary. But yeah, for me, I would say it took 3 years and then we started doing family holidays together with my former husband and his girlfriend. So, and it's been fun. We all get along and it's great. Some people do it right away. In the nesting world, I've seen them do this and it can work. It literally depends on the temperament of all the players. Mm-hmm. And it also depends on the temperament of the children, because sometimes kids will not like the other. And they will set up barriers depending on how old they are. I remember my daughter said to my boyfriend who became my husband, I don't need to listen to you. You're not my dad. Well, her dad had died and there had been 7 years between his death and me meeting this man. And this is now my ex. And I remember he said, well, you're right. I'm not your father. But if he were here, this is what he would do. And she, after that, she trusted him and went, oh yeah. And he is her father now. And there she was in the picture. We were all together. And if people are kind to each other, you can repair anything. And the nesting people do that very well because they put their children first mm-hmm. and not their own. They know how to self-regulate and self-soothe so they can be there for their kids.
Well, and I think that I'm kind of trying to put in order a few things. And one of the key things is everything in life depends on our emotional maturity and our ability to be an adult. And I think that a lot of people struggle with that because we have a society that's very self-centered and focused on our own happiness and our own pleasure. And when we get too caught up in our own happiness and our own pleasure, then it's hard to put our children or the others first. And so I think one of the key things is our level of emotional maturity. The second is the level of trauma that we experience in the divorce. If it's mutual, that's one thing, but trying to find the healing from a divorce that is a surprise is probably different. And I would imagine that the nesting scenario works best when the couple recognizes mutually that the marriage itself is not healthy, but they're both still devoted to the marriage. So I don't want people to think that we're saying that all divorces can move into a nesting, that it takes a very specific kind of.
No, nesting is not a good idea when one person is having more difficulty adjusting to the divorce life. You will see in many divorces with young children, parents literally have to have a drop-off that's not at the home because they can't even be in the same room together. And holidays have to be very strategically planned with no changes, and you want to have everything in writing, and you want to make sure that there are no quick changes, because anything like that could create anxiety in the parent, and that's not good for the children. So that's why even courts will put stuff, you know, parenting plans. You do things so that it makes it easier for the parents to not fight. But yeah, self-regulation is the key to all of it. And that's what the parents have to do, because the children will pick up on the energy, even if nothing is said.
You're listening to my guest, Jennifer Blomfield, licensed marriage and family therapist and divorce coach. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today we're talking about how divorce and divorced families are moving through the pandemic and into the holidays, and how can we create connection when we're supposed to be apart. And although we're not taking calls, you can still share your thoughts or ask a question by giving us a call at 805-549-8855. You can talk to Rachel. Rachel will pass your question on to me to 805-549-8855. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our conversation. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, the road rolls out like a welcome man to a better place than the one we're at. And I ain't got no kind of plan that I've had on this town I can stand. And I got friends out on the coast. Jump in the water and see what flows. We've been saving for a rainy day. Let's beat the storm and be on our way. It don't matter to me where we are, where I won't be. And honey, for once in our lives, let's take our chances and roll the dice. I can be your lucky penny, you can be my four-leaf clover, starting over. This might not be an easy time. There's rivers across and hills to climb. Someday we might fall apart, and some nights might feel cold and dark.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and our number, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, is 805-549-8855. You give us a call, Rachel will be happy to share your thoughts with Jennifer and me. All right. So, Jennifer, we're talking about divorce in general and how we can successfully, or how families and couples can try to successfully create a family environment when the marriage is no longer there. And you had sent me an article about feathering the nest during the holidays. And it was a beautiful story about a husband and wife. And in their nesting, they had a primary home that the children lived in, and they both had separate residences. So it sounded like they had made this kind of their permanent arrangement, that the children were always in the primary home and that they kind of came in and out. And so they were doing a family holiday together. And over the years, they'd done it each year, and they'd gotten so comfortable in their relationship that mom would stay in the guest room and dad would stay, and they all kind of were there to wake up and have hot chocolate in the morning. And is that just Pollyanna, or, you know, is that story an outlier, or do you see that more and more now?
You don't see it a lot. It can be done successfully, but it's very expensive. I mean, you're maintaining three homes. So very, very few people can do that. Usually it's done during the divorce process. And then after a short period of time, they move into their separate houses where there's only two and not three, mm-hmm. Because it is a financial concern. But what has come from the nesting is that once they move out of that house, they can still have the same traditions. And it's, and it doesn't matter whose house it is, but the fact that the other spouse can equally partake, or the ex can partake in all of these family traditions, is lovely. And a lot of people will continue that for as long as the kids are around. And it doesn't mean that they're spending the night all the time, but they'll show up. They'll have 3 or 4 hours on Christmas Eve, or 2 hours on Christmas Day. And I have seen with many of my clients that the others are okay with that. And the others also become a part of that. So the pile gets bigger. My grandson, his father's family has gone to Big Sur every Thanksgiving for over 25 years. And it is a family tradition that is not just them. It is a huge community of people. And to break that tradition because a family broke up, we never wanted to see that. And so we're 9 years into sending him off to this fantastic, wonderful, magical time with his other family. And we do our Thanksgiving with him the week before. And so that's kind of always been our tradition, and we love it. And then we get Easter. So Easter for him is going to his grandmother's in Puerto Vallarta. So he's pretty entitled. And for us, it doesn't cost a lot because it's family. We're not going to a resort. We're going to a home. But that's how it works. And everybody gets along, and everybody can be invited, and no one gets their feelings hurt if they don't show up. It's traditions. And traditions, I think, for the holidays are what make divorce easier, because you have the old traditions and then you start creating new traditions. Like our tradition of Thanksgiving is the week before. And there's many ways that you can celebrate that's not on the exact day.
And last week we talked about traditions and why they're so important for our mental health, especially during a time like the pandemic, and you're not able to easily access those traditions, but it's so important because it gives us a sense of grounding and belonging to something bigger than ourselves. It makes our families feel like they're special. It gives children a sense of identity. It's how we pass along beliefs and values. So it is really important. And I like the idea of continuing those traditions and then creating new traditions in what the new form of the family is. And for someone who hasn't been divorced, here's my question. For a lot of I looked at Divorce Magazine, which I never knew existed, but it's been around for 25 years. So people who have gone through divorce, it's this whole resource on how there's podcasts and there's different articles on how to make it through the holidays and how to talk with your ex. So that's a resource I never knew existed. But one of the things that I kept kind of hitting upon was it was so congenial. that the couples that were able to divorce and be so congenial, then was the divorce necessary?
Yes. One reason I believe that California law, it takes 6 months to divorce, is because when you do go through these things and you do it with a sense of respect and dignity, you're more likely to get back together. But there are certain things in that people, you know, in therapy, there's negotiable compromises and then there's non-negotiables. You can love someone that has bad behavior, but you may not be able to live with someone that has bad behavior or something that that is against your core beliefs, even if it's not bad behavior. There are reasons why people have to split up. So yes, I think that if people have done everything they can to repair, go to counseling, talk to, you know, their pastors, wherever they go for that support, and it still doesn't work, then if they can lovingly part, then it is in the best interest of all of them. And I do see how people get along a lot better when they make that decision. Mm-hmm. And
they're able to make the decision and it's not made for them.
Yes. And sometimes even in hindsight, when someone is what I call a sucker punch, like, wow, I didn't see this coming. Once a person moves on and takes care of themselves, they go, oh gosh, yeah, I don't know what else I could have done to change the circumstances. And then they know that this was the right decision. But that does take time.
The research by Paul Bohannon, he talks about the six stations of divorce. And he says that one of the most challenging, there's two that people don't pay attention to. One is the community divorce, that when a marriage ends, it impacts not just the extended family, but your friend circles, your sports clubs you belong to, that the community itself really has to alter and change. But then the other one, he said that a lot of couples, especially those with children, never fully navigate is psychological divorce. And that really is the key for being able to move forward, that you have to psychologically separate yourself by reinventing who you are, by coming up with your own identity separate from your ex, a new friend group. And he said that really is a sticking point for couples with children, that people don't often successfully psychologically divorce.
Well, it's because a lot of people are held hostage by their own bitterness. And even in religious communities where people will say, why would God do this? You know, that people want an answer for their pain and they want someone to pay for their pain. And in America, where we have such a litigious society, that if you get in an accident, you have personal loss, you know, you're given millions of dollars for suffering. Whereas before that happened, people felt their loss and they rode the waves of pain and grief and they moved on. But some people don't move on. You'll see some couples that have been divorced for 20 years and they won't attend any weddings. They won't speak to each other. And that's so sad because they literally are held hostage of their own bitterness. If you can forgive yourself first, because a lot of people blame themselves for staying in a marriage longer than they should have, or they blame themselves for what could I have done better. Once you forgive yourself that you did the best you could and everyone lightens up, then it just what's left is the love. All the other things disappears. But it does take people to do some self-reflection and some soul searching and some counseling. But as my favorite therapist, Elizabeth Barrett, says, sometimes you can just talk to a best friend or a mentor and you can get the same than going to a professional therapist. So I'm living proof of that because you helped me for many years.
So let's talk about what that looks like from a divorce coach's perspective, because at the beginning of the show, you talked about that shock of the divorce, and that you kind of go into almost a dissociative state and you're starting to have to make decisions, but you're not really in your body. So talk a bit about how a divorce coach, it can really help through this period of time.
That's probably what I do the most with clients is teach them how to self-regulate and to not go into blaming themselves. Because people that blame others usually move on a little quicker. But when you blame yourself, it's a much harder, you know, pit to crawl out of. I teach at Mission College Prep, and I had to do a Zoom meeting with all the parents about socio-emotional stuff. And they wanted to know what we could do for their kids. And what I spent my time talking about was what they could do for themselves. And I talked about oxytocin, cortisol, and mirror neurons. When you lose a primary, you lose the person that you go to when you're feeling low. And when you're talking and making eye contact with someone that you care about and they care about you, you are getting mirror neurons of empathy that take your brain into a place where you feel safe. And you're not in that amygdala hijack. Now, the amygdala hijack, as all of the therapists know, is that fight or flight place we go when we live in fear. In a divorce, people are in a fear state. And when you are in a fear state, your body is being flooded with cortisol. It affects you physically, mentally, and it just wears you down. So that is where the most of the work is done, so people can learn how to do all that for themselves. And a lot of times they have to call someone. I mean, a person doesn't quit drinking without a sponsor. Usually you got to have somebody in your back pocket that can get you back to your prefrontal cortex when you're living in that fight or flight.
And that is the piece with the divorce. You've lost that person who would be your calm. And you've got to
exactly. Yeah. And that makes it even harder, because there's those moments like, oh, I got to call her. I've got to call him. This was the person that was my go-to, and they're not there. And it's really none of your business anymore. But you have to be respectful that they do have a new life. And in many cases, a new primary.
You're listening to my guest, Jennifer Blomfield, licensed marriage and family therapist and divorce coach. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Rachel, you had a call for us.
Yeah, Elizabeth, a caller has requested tools to reach emotional maturity when each partner is triggering the other and both come from divorced families.
Well, that's a great question. I'll throw my two cents in, and Jennifer, you can add.
And can you repeat? It was hard for me to hear the question, if you could repeat it.
How do you help people reach a level of emotional maturity when the couple together trigger each other and continue to kind of fire off the responses? And so I'm hearing from the caller is, hey, we're trying to keep it together, but when we're together, our levels of emotional maturity trigger each other into arguments. And my first thought is always, the simple thing is sit down and write down all the reasons why you're there and remember the story of why you met each other. And then the second thing, when it comes to emotional maturity, that comes from a place of knowing where you're going. You know, who do I want to be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Who is the person I am trying to become? And then become that person today. Because I think we spend a lot of our life talking about who will be when we get thin, who will be when we get divorced, who will be when we are better at our job, right? We spend a lot of our life talking about who will be. And the real measure of emotional maturity is being that person today and not pushing it off. And that requires making hard decisions that that may not be comfortable, making compromises, letting go of things that we thought were so important to us, but in the scheme of our lives really aren't. So those are my quick answers to developing emotional maturity. And as far as triggering each other, you know, a lot of that comes from boredom. If you watch kids together, siblings together, and they're all watching TV or having a good time, and then someone jumps up and jumps on the other sibling, that generally just comes from being bored and not having a way of stimulating yourself or finding a new way of being together. And couples do that. When they get bored, they start picking at each other because it brings a rise. In some ways, bad behavior attention is just as good as good behavior attention. So that's another start of a triggering. And when you come from families of divorce, the key to success is you can't just say, I'll never get divorced. You have to have a different model. You can't just say, I'll never be like my parents. You have to understand, what was it that didn't work in my parents' marriage? If you're able to get that information, that's a great starting point. If not, you need to say, my parents' marriage didn't work. I can't just not be them. I need to have a plan of what marriage would look like when it succeeds. And that's where great counseling helps. That's where a book like For Better by, I'll have to pull her name up out of my head somewhere, but the book is For Better by Tara Parker Pope. And the whole book is about how to navigate your marriage and keep it stable and have goals, because you can't just operate your life on how you're not going to be. You have to create a life based on how you are going to act and behave, especially when things get stressful. You have to have a game plan for navigating stressful periods of time. How do we improve our communication skills? How do we use our coping skills? What do we do when we have arguments? You have to literally create a marital game plan that you can put into effect when you start to struggle. What about you, Jen?
Well, when I talk about emotional maturity, I find that people that have the most difficult self-regulating are people that have attachment issues. And attachment issues are nobody's fault. Attachment issues come from early childhood. So if your primary is the person that was really the person that held you up, when your primary isn't there and you are together and your heart sort of opens again, it's confusing. So you'll think, oh yeah, we're getting a divorce, and it's a vulnerable time. So if you have attachment issues and you're vulnerable, that's the perfect storm for feeling lost. And so when you are talking to your soon to be ex, it can go two ways. You can be angry with each other because you no longer have that host, which is the person that is your support group. And you lack the emotional maturity because you've never been able to take care of yourself emotionally. And it can come up unexpectedly, like, I've never had these issues in my life. And why am I having them now? Because maybe for the first time, you've never been truly alone. And that's what it looks like. And that's what it feels like. And that's why you have to be careful, because you can start to feel like, do I still love my ex? But the real question you have to ask yourself is, am I still attached? Am I still in neediness of am I depending? So there's independence and there's depending on someone, and then there's codependency. So if the attachment piece is codependent, then you may not have the emotional maturity to make it work. And that's when you literally have to have no contact until you both have moved on. And sadly, some people can't move on until they've met someone else, which is another whole story for Gray Divorce, which is another show.
Well, it is. And the answer always in all things therapy land is it depends, because every person is unique and every couple is unique. Yes. There really isn't a one size fits all answer for anything therapeutic. So you just heard two clinicians' different take on it. And what's interesting, because I come from a no divorce position, I'm very much about divorce busting, and I have very strong feelings about couples working it out. And Jennifer has a different perspective because she's successfully navigated that, and she works in the world of collaborative divorce and has seen a lot of success. So take those two perspectives and think about your own life and values and beliefs, because at the end of the day, when we're seeking therapy, we're seeking help and support, it's really important to recognize that every person you go to comes at their work with a specific lens or bias or perspective. We all do. And so it's really important that you find a clinician that supports your values and belief systems, because otherwise you can find yourself really being carried away on a clinician's belief system that may not really support what you wanted at the end. So it's important to do your work and interview whoever you go to for support. But when we talk about triggering and attachment, it's great to have a good clinician to work these things through. Jennifer, this hour goes so fast whenever we're together. But if people wanted to talk to you about divorce coaching and how to navigate what they're experiencing, how can they get in touch with you?
You can go to my website, divorceslow.com, or you can email me at maryjenniferblomfield@gmail.com.
And you can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and I'll be happy to get you in touch with Jennifer. If you want ideas for how to make it through the holidays with your pod or with your binuclear family, feel free to reach out. We'll try to get you some support. But as always, we appreciate you being a part of this conversation. You can follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can follow me on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me a message that way. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, and you can podcast if you'd like to hear other shows. I look forward to continuing this conversation next Tuesday at 2. Until then, thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Hey, I'm gonna really be your mother, but that don't mean that I don't really love ya. And even though I married your father, it's not the only reason I'm here for ya. I think you're beautiful.